Hello, the winter break is on, so that doesn't mean we can't have podcasts. It's a Celtic Underground podcast. It's a football podcast from the people behind CelticUnderground.net. So the season is pretty much halfway through, so we decided we would have a quick report card on the season so far. We're still in the limbo land of the winter break, and so while the players are off in Dubai in the hotbed of the birth of World War III, thought we'd pull together an esteemed panel. So we've got Lachie Moore and Duncan Smiley of Glasgow Rocks fame to discuss the season so far. We split it into Europe, League Cup, League, and then it goes into a ramble about what players may go, and what positions we need to strengthen in the transfer window. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, with him, Lachie Moore, and him, Duncan Smiley. So, we've got a report card time for Celtic and Neil Lennon. We are more or less halfway through the season because we've got the winter break. So I thought I'd get on Lachie Moore and Duncan Smiley to review the first half of the season. How are you guys doing?
Fine, thanks.
Very well, Harry. Very well indeed.
Excellent. So, see, I know it's difficult to cast your mind back. You get to a certain age and going back in time in the short term becomes difficult. But I thought what we'd do is we'd do a half-year review talking about the season so far and really breaking it up into the chunks of Europe, League Cup and League. Obviously, League Cup will be a relatively short conversation because that's only three or four games. But before we start all that, we prepare for the season with our transfer window in the summer. So, Duncan, what were your thoughts on the transfer window going into it and then coming out of it?
I mean, I think overall, I was pretty pleased. We seemed to go into it without any fullbacks and come out with like half a dozen. I quite liked the profile of the player that we signed, and by that I mean like big strong guys like Julien and El Hamid and Bolingoli. They seem to be that Neil Lennon was recruiting players in the mould of the team that he used to play in under Martin O'Neill. So I was pretty pleased by the way that we started the recruitment.
Lachie, what was your thoughts on it?
I thought so too. I remember the time we discussed the signing of El Hamid, and you seemed to think that bringing in a guy at his age was a bad move, but I think when he's played, he's proved to be a good player. However, he seems to be injury prone, which worries me a wee bit. But apart from that, I thought, you know, at the time they looked to be good signings, and most of them have proved to be slightly disappointed that they haven't given the Taylor, is it the boy from Kilmarnock, is that his name, Taylor? He has needed more game time. He seems to think that Bolingoli is the better of the two. But on the occasions I've seen Taylor, I've been impressed by him. I'm not so sure about whether or not Julien is fully adapted to Scottish football, because I don't think he likes it up him. I think he wants to play football a bit, and he doesn't always get a chance to do that in Scottish football.
I thought he really had an issue at the defeat away to Livingston from that perspective. I was quite agitated by the euphemisms used on Radio Scotland on the way back about, when I was listening to it on the way back from the game, about he won't have experienced a game like this before, and he won't have had this and he won't have had that. And I thought, that's not complimenting Scottish football. Because what you're actually saying is, he's 26 years of age and he's played in a league where playing like that doesn't happen anymore, because players get booked and fouls get given. And in Scotland, we still have that. That's not really a compliment to Scottish football, is what I thought. But I did think Morelos was trying to be physical in the New Year game. And although we lost the game, we'll get on to that. He did seem to cope better with the physicality, I thought.
The comments you're talking about, they were making them before the game started on Sports Scene that day. And it was more or less of that approach would be entirely justified. And I was thinking, this is pretty primitive stuff. If that's the best that you can hope for from a game that's about to start, that one guy will be roughing another guy up. But it's just the way they play in Scotland.
So the only thing about the transfer window, Duncan, which feeds into a European chat that we're going to get onto, is that Fraser Foster, Maurice Bauer, Greg Taylor, Frimpong, who else? I haven't looked through. I'm looking at the squad. Elianussi were all signed after we'd been knocked out of the Champions League.
Yeah.
So yeah.
What's your thoughts on whether we should have had them in before that or not, Duncan?
I mean, there's a pattern here that's happening each season where we don't know whether to stick a twist and invest in people before we qualify for the Champions League or not. I don't know how it works. I don't know, had we qualified for the Champions League, would we have opened a different box and gone for a different quality player? I don't think we would have. I think it's proven quite difficult to sign players that early. Most other countries aren't ball-deep in their season like we are in July, and a lot of players aren't back, and it's very easy to criticise, well, we should have signed these ones and we should have signed those ones, and we could even be saying that now, we're a week into the year and we still haven't signed anybody in this window. But the players that you've just mentioned, there's some smashing players in there. What there isn't is a striker, by the way. But I think it is difficult to sign quality players when you're still in July and even right at the beginning of August.
Yeah, I mean, I do know. I mean, I suppose it gets back to the issue we had last season where, and we as a club seem to say this every season, we say January is a really important transfer window for us because we start the Champions League qualifying so early, we need to sign people in January, and then we never really do it.
But we do say that for the reasons you've given, but I would say that this transfer window that we're in right now is the most important one for many, many years, not because of getting ready for the Champions League and for next year. We'll deal with that when we get there. More importantly, so that we can see out this season. I think this is the most important transfer window that we've had to deal with in the past 5, 6, 7 years.
Well, we'll get on to the reasons for that, but let's start, Lackey, with the Champions League qualification. So, we had 4 rounds to get through. We had Sarajevo, and then, can't remember how to pronounce the next one. Was it Nom...
Kalju or something? Nom Kalju or something?
Yeah, Nom Kalju, and then Cluj. So... Lackey, what was your thoughts on Sarajevo, Nom Kalju, that was it. What was your thoughts on the first 2 bits of the Champions League?
I think they coped very well with it. I mean, I don't think they were under any stress. And in fact, I thought they coped quite well with the first game against Cluj. But I was absolutely astonished that they should let in 4 goals at home and be knocked out. That really took me aback. I was in America and I knew that it was 1 each, but by the time we get back from the function we were at and I turned the telly on and saw they'd been beaten 4-3, I couldn't believe it, because they'd gone there and drawn comfortably.
Although I know we lost 4 goals, but in my head I don't think of it as we lost 4 goals, because the 4th goal was...
I know.
All Celtic players were in their half. And they just, and it was literally the last seconds of the game, and they went on the park and scored. So that's a wee bit.
You mentioned the Sarajevo game or the Sarajevo game. I remember watching that and thinking, normally these first rounds of the qualifiers for us, they're a skoosh, and you're home and hosed. But we went 1-0 down over there, and it was an absolute monsoon. And I was already panicking in the first half hour of the game, thinking, surely this isn't going to go this way. And they went up and scored, and it just had all the hallmarks of a defeat for us. But we came back and we won it. And then I think the next games, we won like 4-0 and 3-0 or something. I can't remember. It was like the game was killed at Celtic Park. And then we went to Cluj. And again, watching the Cluj game, I thought we coped very, very well and could have won the game in Cluj. But as Lackey says there, it's if I had to write down 10 of the most surreal games that I've ever watched at Celtic Park, that Cluj one would be in there. I still can't believe we lost to them.
Oh, I mean, the whole thing about that Cluj game was it was the Brown giving away the penalty.
Yeah.
Aye, brain fart.
Yeah, because right up to the point Brown giving away the penalty, actually the team who looked like they were going to score next was us.
Yeah.
And then Brown gives away the penalty, and the mentality of our team seemed to go. And it was the reason why when we got them in the Europa League, I thought, well, we'll beat them. We'll beat them at home. We'll draw away. Worst. That's the worst we'll do, because we were better than them. So,
yeah.
Champions League. It's disappointing to not get. I mean, for me, the standard we're at, I think our ideal situation is to get into the Champions League, finish third, and drop into the Europa League.
Yeah, because you get the kudos to be the Champions League, you get the big check, and then you get a bit of European football after Christmas. That is our level. It's where we need to establish ourselves before we start thinking about qualifying out of a Champions League group. But losing to Cluj, I'm not even. Was it Belgrade that we would have got? In the next round, I think they're albeit they didn't do anything in the Champions League. I'm not so sure that we'd have beat them, but it'd have been certainly nice to give it a go.
The thing about Sarajevo was that somebody had said to me when we got Sarajevo that they were a better standard than any team we could play in the next round, and would be on a par with the best teams we could play in the round that we could knocked out with Cluj. It was really odd that Sarajevo went. So we then got AIK Stockholm, and we comfortably dispatched with them, Lackey. So we're in the group stages. And the thing about it is, that is, we won in Sarajevo, we won at home against Sarajevo, we won against Kaluju, or whatever. We won at home against them and away. We drew with Cluj and lost away. And then we beat AIK twice. So
we battered them away, didn't we? Was it 4-1?
4-1.
We hammered them away from home.
So out of 8 European games, we lost one, drew one, and won 6. So what was your thoughts when the group draw was made for the Europa League, Lackey?
I thought it was a good group. I know obviously everybody thought Lazio would be the favourites, but having seen them play Cluj, I thought they'd beat Cluj. I thought Rennes would have been a more difficult prospect because they actually played very well in the pre-season friendly. Now, I know Celtic didn't have their strongest team out, but they played good football. They looked to have good players. But the way it turned out, they actually won the section comfortably. The one thing I would say about being in the Champions League, and I agree with you about the money, but the last few years when they've been in the Champions League, it hasn't been pleasant watching.
No, it's not.
Whereas this was pleasant watching. I enjoyed the games.
Yeah, I mean, we've got absolutely horsed in the Champions League, and it hasn't been pretty. I've had to look at the Sudocream after some of the games, but I genuinely think we would be a different Celtic in the Champions League with Neil Lennon rather than Brendan Rodgers. I don't think we get beat 4-5 and 6-0 off teams because we would sacrifice our principles in order to try and grind out a result in the game, which was something Brendan Rodgers wasn't prepared to do.
I agree with you, but I was just aware that you actually said when I was thinking of getting the tickets, I said to my grandson, you know, you get a wee bit tired of going up there for you'll never walk alone, a big cheer, and then you get horsed. you know, it's a long way for Dumfries to just get gubbed all the time. So
it's like a great European night until the game starts.
That's right. And it got that way that they were getting a reputation for this great arena, this great amphitheatre, and great atmosphere. The atmosphere was lasting for 5 or 10 minutes in recent years.
Yeah.
But at least this year, it was good. It was good fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I get really agitated with those Celtic supporters who have been conned by... It's only the English who are demeaning towards the Europa League. And they've been conned by the English attitude that Europa League is nothing. That's your standard. That's you know... That when you now look at the teams that... You know, we're playing Lazio. When the French Cup holders... When you look at the teams that are playing Europa League football, they are teams that were playing Champions League football 10, 15 years ago.
We've talked about this before, though, Brian, that the Europa League is actually a league that we can enjoy playing in, whereas that the Champions League is beyond us. Even though I accept what we were saying there about being practical and being adaptable and being pragmatic, those teams are still very, very strong in comparison to us. And it would have been a hard shift.
It would have been so... The
Europa League is our level.
We won the Europa League group stage that we were in with a game to spare. So, Duncan, marks out of 10, what would you give for our European campaign this season? Knocked out of the Champions League with a qualifying round to spare, won the Europa League group stage with a qualifying round to spare. So marks out of 10 for it.
I would give it an 8 out of 10. I mean, the reason I'm not saying 9, you can't say 10 because it would be the Champions League, but I would say a good 8 out of 10 for me.
Wacky?
I would say 7.5.
7.5? why the half mark down from Duncan?
Well, I'm not sure where we'll go from here. We'll wait and see.
Well, that's the next question I was gonna ask you. What do you think we'll do? Copenhagen, the next round, last 32.
People say we wouldn't have beaten Belgrade, but perhaps we would have. So the money that we didn't get is a big loss. We talked about this back in August, and I said if we could get into the Champions League and get that money, we could bury the Huns financially. But we don't have that money now.
So what's your expectations against Copenhagen?
I'm sure we are favourites, like bookies' favourites, but I would absolutely fancy us to beat Copenhagen over two games. 100% I would.
Wacky?
I would hope so. Yeah, I would think we should beat them.
I mean, they're not going to be any mugs for sure, but there were some tougher teams in there. It's a good draw. We're away from home first. I would be surprised and obviously disappointed if we didn't beat them over two legs.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Well, that'll be good. So that's Europe, 7.5 and 8 out of 10. So I will move on to the very brief... Because we play in Europe, the very brief League Cup campaign. We played Partick Thistle, and we beat them 5-0 at home in the Betfred League Cup. Then we played Hibs. Was it straight from Partick Thistle to Hibs? Is that right? Then we played Hibs at Hampden.
Did we go into the quarterfinals?
I think so, yeah. Christ. No, we played Dunfermline. That was it. We played Dunfermline and we went to extra time and people were not happy. It was straight after we'd been knocked out by Cluj. So we had the struggle against Dunfermline where we were minutes away from penalties. We were 6 minutes away from penalties.
The natives were restless.
The natives certainly were restless. Then we thumped Partick Thistle 5-0 at home. Then we had the 5-2 game at Hampden against Hibs. And then obviously the game against the other Glasgow team. George, Lackey, your review of the League Cup.
In total?
Aye, before the Cup final, before the Cup final.
Well, I mean, the Dunfermline game was a harem scarem thing. I was sort of couldn't believe that they had to put him away out the road. The Partick Thistle was comfortable. The Hibs game ebbed and flowed a wee bit, but I think Celtic were always the better team. So the lead up to it was, apart from that, was you got precipice that they trod with Dunfermline, was fairly comfortable. And you would have expected it to be that. I actually thought against the Hibs they played some good football, but they were a wee bit lackadaisical at the back. But the actual final, I thought, was not very great. It wasn't as bad as it was reported in the paper, but I thought they allowed themselves to be bullied a wee bit.
So, Duncan, what was your review of the League Cup campaign?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's a good one because it's sat on a shelf at Celtic Park.
Yep,
so that's the first thing. We're doing a half season review here. There's one thing that can be won, and we've won it. Personally, the League Cup doesn't mean anything to me unless it's tagged onto a treble. It's by far the least valuable of the three things that are up for grabs. But the fact of the matter is, we've won it. We keep our run. That's our 10th trophy that we've won in succession. So we still get a chance of doing a quadruple treble. So it's in the bag. I didn't see one of the most surreal games ever. I was actually flying back. I was in Dubai. And I was flying back, and while I was in the air, the game was going on, and the plane had Wi-Fi, but not Wi-Fi enough to watch the game, obviously. I was watching the game on Twitter instead. I actually watched the game. I watched the goal and the sort of sports scene highlights. But yeah, the fact of the matter is, we won the cup, so therefore it's a success because that's all that matters in cups.
Yeah. Nobody in years to come will look back and say, although it was a 1-0 victory. I mean, one of the things people keep going on about Fraser Foster having the game of his life, and the point I keep making is, apart from the save from, I think it was Ryan Jack in the top left-hand corner, they are all saves that a goalkeeper who plays for a team of Celtic standards should make. And I'm not belittling them.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he made the saves, no good saves. The point I'm making is, we shouldn't have a goalkeeper who's not capable of making those saves. A club of our standing should have a goalkeeper who's, you know, it's...
Well, you're being a wee bit harsh there, Harry.
I'm not being...
You're right, because I don't think Scott Bain and Craig Gordon make those saves. I think... Yeah,
actually,
the right,
do you know what?
Right,
see, if you go back and look at a couple of cup finals at Hampden, I think you'll find Craig Gordon would make those saves.
Mm-hmm. No, certainly doesn't say the penalty.
No,
he doesn't say the penalty because he can't save penalties.
I think somebody told me that Craig Gordon has saved one penalty in his professional career.
Yeah, it was for us away in Israel under Brendan Rodgers.
If that stat is real,
he saved two actually. He saved one in a
cup final.
In a cup, but it was a penalty shootout.
In regular time.
If you go and look at his penalty stats, I think there's been one St Mirren miss. I think it was St Mirren missed a penalty in a League Cup game against us. We're in Brendan Rodgers' first season, I think it was. They hit the bar, and I think Alloa. Or was it Alloa? Anyway, one of those two. And also,
I was told there's one of these guys that gets everything right. He said he saved one penalty
when he was at Sunderland. Somebody hit the
regular
post.
Time.
When he was at Sunderland, somebody hit the post. And
that's
not
saved, though, is it?
No.
Yeah. But no, Foster did have a good game. And it's for me.
No, the point I'm making is people are talking about Fraser Foster having the game of his life. I'm just making the point, no, he's having the game that a player of his standard should have. That's the difference I'm making. People are implying it was a once-in-a-lifetime performance from Fraser Foster. No, it was the standard of performance that a goalkeeper of his ability should have, is my point.
I think that was a sop to them, because anybody who saw him play against Barcelona would not say that that performance recently was the game of his life. Because the saves he made against Barcelona were fantastic. There was only one really fantastic save in that game. But I think it was a shock to them to make them think how hard done to they'd been to that this goalkeeper played the game of his life. They did not.
I genuinely think you're right. I think it was part of the narrative of, well, the only reason we lost this is because their goalkeeper had the greatest game he's ever had.
Yeah.
But overall, cup final, Lackey, what was your thoughts on it?
Well, we talked about it at length the last time I was on the podcast. As I said to you, I watched it dispassionately, knowing what the result was. And I didn't think it was as bad a hammering as the media made it out to be. I thought most of the harem scarem events were caused by Celtic errors rather than by brilliant Rangers play. And I noticed that I've watched it several times. The number of times, if you watch the goal again, not a single Rangers player appeals for offside.
No.
Not one. But all of a sudden, it was 5 yards offside of it. Four of them offside. If that were the case, their hands would have been up and they just turned away.
Well, that's one of the things for me. One of the things that bugs me, and I know I'm being pedantic here, is this narrative of three Celtic players were offside.
Yeah.
The way the modern offside rule is, you cannot have three players offside because the only player who's offside is the player who's active.
That's right.
So, for a start, you can. But secondly, they all keep missing the Rangers player who's in the middle of the line of Celtic players.
But it's the fact that none of their players appeal. I mean, players almost automatically look to the linesman now and appeal. None of them did. Not one of them. Found that interesting.
So, Duncan, marks out of 10 for the League Cup campaign.
10 out of 10, because it's big and shiny and silver and it sat at Celtic Park.
and Lackey?
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so far we've got 8 and 7.5 respectively out of 10 for the European campaign and 10 out of 10 for the League Cup. So, on to the league. So, Lackey, overall, give us your thoughts on the league campaign so far.
I think there'll be one or two wee glitches in it. Obviously, the one at where do you call it?
Livingston
was that was you could almost see it coming, and yet it shouldn't have happened. There were too many really good players played poorly on that day, including stalwarts like the goalkeeper and the two centre backs. I mean, that the second goal was just criminal the way they allowed that goal to be scored. But that apart, I think they played pretty good. They played good football, scored a lot of goals, and everything seemed to be going swimmingly up until the last game. And I was astonished that they lost that game, because I really thought they'd be up for it. I didn't think the Rangers would be able to bully them out there in their own place.
Duncan?
Well, I mean, we're at the halfway point. We're actually just ahead of the halfway point because we squeezed that extra game in. But if you'd have said to me the first day of the season that we'd have 52 points on the board and only have dropped 8 points for the 1st of January, I'd have bit your hand off. 100 points wins you the league every single year. We've only once achieved 100 points. And that was an invincible, and like in the last 10, 12 years or so. The invincible season, we got over 100 points. Even when Rangers were in the league, we were still scoring in the 90s. Uh-huh. 100 points wins you the league. And I'm pretty sure if we only drop 8 points between now and the end of the season, then we've got 9 in a row. But I think we've played reasonably well. We've scored 100 goals. I think the danger here is that because of the result and the performance for the Rangers game on the 29th, if we'd have won that game 2-0, The media, us, everybody, the world and his wife would have been saying that we're brilliant, we're the best thing since sliced bread, we're unbeatable, we're this, we're that. So we're actually saying it's coming down to one single game. I'm not pleased the way that the season, that the first half's ended, with us losing to them, obviously. But 52 points on the board and only having lost two games and drawn one is a pretty good return.
Going into that Rangers game, we were 10 points and 12 goal difference of plus 12 better than at the same number of games last season.
Right.
And I'm just trying to find the stats in relation to the season as a whole, but it's something like your point about the 100 points thing.
We got 87 points last year.
Yeah. And it's something like, I think there's been three occasions this century where we have scored more league goals. No, it's three occasions this century where we have had more points after this number of games than we've got just now.
Right.
And one occasion this century where we've had more league goals than we've got just now.
Yeah. And I'm guessing because when Rangers went bust and get thrown out of the league, we tend to run away with the league and we would score, like, I bet a few of those around about then, because we would I think a couple of times.
Actually, do you know what? The average number of goals scored at this point in the season is about 40. And during the period when Rangers weren't there, it was 38, 39, 40.
I was talking about points.
Sorry, points, right, yeah.
Because we were pushing 100 points when they died, but we sort of took our foot off the gas at the end of the season. We could have probably got a lot more, but your point's right. It's in terms of 52 points after 20 games is a good return. It'll win you most leagues, not the English Premiership, but it'll win you most leagues.
It is a good return, but you're aware, of course, that if they were to win the game in hand, we would be a point behind.
Yes.
Which was most disappointing considering the way they'd played and the way that they could have stretched it had they won the game. But I suppose it's buried deep in my psyche that the year that we were going for 10 in a row, they went to Ibrox well ahead and we were all singing at Christmas, it's going to be 10 in a row. And they lost to Ibrox 2-0. And there was a sea change. And from then to the end of the season, they stumbled and Rangers get stronger. Now, I don't know if the psychological emphasis of that game is strong enough. I'm hoping Lennon's right today when they say that they've just, to quote Admiral Yamamoto, that they've raised a sleeping giant. And I hope that's what happens. But I'm not sure how much confidence they'll take from it. And as Harry's often pointed out, they don't need to be better than us. They just need to be better than everybody else.
Yeah, and I think that's the point in relation to, I'm not saying so everything's hunky-dory because the points and everything. Yeah, only three times this, and you're taking a note of it, only three times this century have Celtic had more than 52 points after 20 games. One was the Invincible season,
yeah,
when we had 58, and the other two, we were on 55 points.
Do you see when that is? When was that?
I think only one has been put, two of those were during Martin O'Neill's time.
All right, okay.
And then the Seville season, we had 58 points, is the only one where we scored more goals after 20 games than we scored this season.
And one hee-haw.
The average is 40 goals after and we're right on, was it 55 goals, I think it is at the moment.
Okay.
So I'm not then saying so everything is rosy in the garden and we shouldn't worry about it. The point I'm making is people, I read a lot of people online who were exceptionally critical after losing to Rangers.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's annoying. But getting back to the point that they made in the statement, if we'd had VAR, we would be 2 points further ahead, because we'd have got two penalties against Hibs. We'd have likely scored a penalty at Easter Road against Hibs. We would have won that game, and we'd be 4 points ahead of them. They'd have a game in hand if VAR was in Scottish football. So we've lost to Livingston, which is, we were just not ready for it physically for some reason. We drew at Hibs, and we have lost to Rangers. But some of the stuff online, the vitriol about because we have lost to Rangers, and the only point I'm making about with those stats is, actually, we are ahead of where we would normally be at this point in the season. The difference is, they didn't lose to, they've not done the stupid lose to Livingston that we've done.
No. And I think that's the big difference here for me, is that what surprised us is how well they've done. We would have expected them to drop as few points as they have, and I'd be very surprised if they repeat that in the second half of the season. But I don't want to fall into that trap, because I made that mistake myself of thinking, after the cup final, we can't play that bad, they can't play that good, and we'll have 11 men, so we'll beat them on the 29th. I don't want to fall into that trap again. But I don't think, I would, if I was allowed to bet in football, which I'm not, I would bet 100 points wins this league.
Lucky.
I think Duncan's right. You don't want to get into that mindset. I was so surprised that the least I expected was a draw. I really couldn't see them beating us at New Year, because there was so much hanging on the game for both clubs. And to be outfought by them is just a wee bit disturbing.
Your point, Duncan, about expecting to, I mean, maybe again, maybe it's last season, you know, when we had the crap New Year game last season and get beat.
Yeah.
And we were neck and neck with them on points. I'm not saying it was the greatest transfer window in the world, but we focused on attacking players for the transfer window. And
yeah.
And then went on a run straight after the winter break that stretched away from them.
Yeah, because they dropped points all over the shop and the sort of first four or five games back after the Christmas break.
That's right.
And one of the things about that is, I don't know if either of you saw, there was a tweet from Barca Boy where he was talking about something like, and he said it was the same last season, something like 6% of Rangers players have missed a game so far this season because of injury. And I'm sure it was like 18% of our first team squad have missed a game because of injury. And the only, I mean, yeah, for, you know, one of the things I said to him is, well, part of that is it's repeat offenders like Lee Griffiths, like Jozo Simonovic. It's people who are missing games because of injury last season as well. But the other thing I then wondered, based on the fact that we stretched away from them last season and they started dropping points, are we resting first team players when they've just got a small niggle in the first half of the season because we don't want to put them at risk for the second half of the season, and they're not, because they've got a tighter squad of quality of players that can play first team football, and as a consequence, they played players through their niggles, and we haven't, and that those niggles will catch up as the season goes on. Or am I just being optimistic?
No, I had that exact conversation with somebody the weekend. I do believe because we've got a bigger squad and we've got more quality, we feel we've got the luxury of not rushing somebody back, or not risking somebody, or even when you make a new signing, taking less time for them to get in the first team. Whereas they have to go with the player, and if he's 80% fit at Rangers, he's playing. But if he's 80% fit at Celtic, he's not playing. I think that's factual. And I don't know that that's factual, but that makes perfect sense to me. And I think that we would be very unlucky to continue on the injury front like we have done for the second half of the season. And again, maybe be very fortunate because I've not really had any major injuries. Now, that sounds like you're clutching at straws when you're starting to hope for injuries, but that tends to be how most seasons for most teams pan out. It's very seldom you go through a whole season where you don't get four or five of your top players that are out at the same time. And I think we've managed to cope with that. I don't think they could.
Lucky?
Well, I know that Alec Ferguson used to focus on getting his best players fit for what, February, March, April, May. Because that's when the trophies are handed out. But I think Barca Boy's point was he seemed to think there was something wrong with the Celtic's training regime that was causing them.
Well, that was his point, but my point was we don't know enough about the Celtic training regime to say that that's causing it. And is it just simply we're just more cautious about our players?
I'd like to think it's the latter.
I mean, getting back to your point, Duncan, about one of the things that I liked about Lennon's signing strategy in the summer was that it was, I definitely thought it was men he was signing who are a bit more physical. And two of those 6 foot plus players who've missed November and December, which if you know, if you think about it, December, was it 9 games in December and 5 games in November and 9 games. So 14 games of the season and probably a wee bit of October as well. In fact, yeah, I've been missed by El Hamid. And 10 of those have been missed by Elia Nussi.
Yeah.
You see, that would indicate that they are injured.
Oh, no, I know those players are injured. I think he's talking about, you know, you don't play the same team 2 games in a row because somebody's out for a week. I think some of those are just being cautious on a player. But yeah, I think on your physical players that you talked about, Duncan, I mean, there's 2 players who cumulatively between them have missed, 20-odd games?
Especially on Elianusi is a massive. I mean, he's the most expensive player ever to play for Celtic in terms of transfer value, and he has looked quality. And for me, Mikey Johnson just doesn't fit the bill. Replacing him, Elianusi every day. Now you could say that with El Hamed been out, we've been given the gift that is Frimpong. I talk about him now or another day, but for me, he's not a right back. I think that a big, strong, physical right back, and I'm assuming El Hamed is fit. I don't know if he is fit, but for me, El Hamed will be starting at right back when we get back in the season. And I've got a funny feeling that Frimpong will be playing further up the pitch, and Forrest might be taking a wee spell on the bench. And equally, I think that Bolingoli won't be at left back. I think that will be Greg Taylor. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right, and hopefully I don't know how far off Simonovic is, because I think he's a massive loss and I really like him as a player. But if he's
in all the pictures and videos I've seen of the players training in Dubai, Simonovic has been there,
because he brings, like Lackey alluded to it there, that Julien wants to play football, and so does big Chris Ayer. Sometimes you need a proper old school centre half, and that's what Simonovic is. He can certainly not be accused of being a footballer. So if you're then perming any 2 from 3 with those guys, I think you're in a good position if you've got El Hamed back and you've got Simonovic back.
So what we've got, Scott Sinclair, who's in Preston as we speak, I think, having conversations with him. So Lackey, what changes or what areas do you think that they need to strengthen in this January transfer window?
Well, he's only going on loan, so I think he'll just go at the end of the season.
Ah, well, he's got 6 months left in his contract, so they're obviously loaning him out for that, and then
I take Duncan's point about Simonovic. I like Simonovic, but he has played very few games when you consider the length of time he's been a Celtic player. So when it comes to fitness, I wouldn't pin my shirt on Simonovic.
Agreed.
I think he's a great player. but he misses a lot of games.
He's got a hole in his knees, and that's the biggest problem.
Well, I didn't know that, but whatever it is.
Yeah, he's got a big hole in his knee.
I think that Mikey Johnson has a great future, but I think he's a guy you would bring in and out of the team depending who you were playing. But I'm not 100% convinced about Elianusi.
Why not?
There's just something about him. I don't know. I sense he's a luxury player.
Oh, sorry, what do you mean he's a luxury player?
Well, I don't know that he's a guy that does the hard graft. I think when things are going well for him, he's brilliant. But I'm not sure. He does do some brilliant things. But I'd like to see more of him before I thought, as some folk are saying, go out and get the money and buy this guy. Because I don't know if he's worth the money that they're looking for. But I hope he's fit. And I hope he plays as well as he can play.
But I must admit, I like him. I think he looks... I agree with you. And I hope we get the chance to see him play more football. But for me, he looks like a quality player. And you're never going to get... Let's call it... He's a winger. Wingers don't tend to be people that put in shifts 10 games out of 10. You tend to get one or two games out of every three or four out of a winger. But he, for me, looks a really, really good player. And I think Edouard could do with him as well. Mm-hmm. And the team. He really compliments him, so hopefully he will be back. And I agree with you, Mikey Johnston. It's too soon. And I don't want to be that Scottish guy that says, oh, he's too wee. But physically, he's not ready for big games at a European or even at a Rangers level. He gets thrown about like a wet trackie.
So, Mohamed Elianusi, this can't be right. He's scored 13 goals so far this season, I think.
In the mini games?
Well, this is a bit that can't be right, because I'm looking on Transfer Market and they've only got him having played 13 games. I think he's played more than 13 games.
Maybe he started 13.
Aye. 6 in the league, 4 in the Europa League, 3 in the League Cup, 13 games, 13 goals. Aye, 13 games and then 7 as a sub, so 20 games in total.
I like a bit of luxury.
And 20 games and 13 goals. I think he's more of a contributor. I think he's more of a contributor than Sinclair.
I thought in the cup final he was really quite ineffective. He really didn't look.
Yeah, but he was injured.
I was going to say, I don't think he was fit. He's not played since.
He was injured and came off at half time and then hasn't played since, because what happened is the fracture in his foot, the injury, whatever injury he's got, came back in the first half, and that's why he went off.
You wonder why they played him in the first place.
Because he passed a fitness test. But then when he got on the park, the injury flared up.
Uh-huh.
And so he went off. So I don't think you can judge him in the League Cup final, because he was injured, went off at half-time and hasn't played a game since.
Well, hopefully we'll get a chance to judge him over the next couple of months.
I hope so.
So any other positions you would want strengthened, Duncan?
Oh God, yeah. I mean, the fact of the matter is, it's. I mean, we need a striker, and we need a oven ready, good to go striker. We don't need a project. We need somebody that can come in there and play tomorrow. Griffiths is done, as far as I'm concerned. He's been stealing a wage for a long time, and he's done. He doesn't look as if he's ever going to make a comeback for me at Celtic. Bayo or Bayo, however you say it, I've seen him come on. He's a bit Bambi and ice about him. He doesn't look, again, ready for me to step in. If Edouard, heaven forbid, pulls a hamstring and he's out for 6 or 7 weeks, Bayo's not the man that comes in. Griffiths isn't ready. We absolutely 100% need a striker. And like I say, not some 18-year-old from Lithuania or something. We need a good-to-go. I don't care if he's 34 and he's playing the Championship or he's playing the Premiership in England. We need somebody that can come in there and play next week. And I actually think, crazy as it sounds, I think we need another left back, and we arguably need a number 10 as well.
Lackey?
Well, I mean, you've got Christie's going to be out for months.
No. No, he's not out for months. He'll be back in a couple of weeks.
No, I read somewhere he was out for the end of the season.
I'll guarantee he's not out for that long.
Well, it's interesting you say that, Duncan, and I know you would know, because I have read anywhere from 2 months to the end of the season, and the most reliable was 2 months. Having said that, if you think it's a few weeks, 2 months was when the injury occurred. So 1 month, and that's at the end of January. 2 months, and that's the end of February. If you're saying... So it's not a few weeks isn't a million miles from now, isn't a million miles from 2 months from the injury, I suppose.
Well, hopefully, I hope you're right, Duncan, because I think he's an important player.
Aye. I don't think he's going to be out that long.
I think...
Is he injured by?
Aye.
Aye.
He's not training, but he's
injured. No, yeah.
I think that in the coming weeks, they're all going to need to up their game. I think Cham's going to need to get to the level he can play at, because I think when he plays well, he's a really good player. But I think this, I don't know about this talk about, what's his name, Victor, coming back. I don't know whether there's any truth in that at all. But I think, him.
So that, I have been told by two people who are really reliable, and this is why, you know, sometimes you kind of bleed. Two people who, both of whom know people in the club and would be very reliable. One has told me we're going to bring back Victor, and the other has told me there is zero chance of Victor coming back.
Yes, that's what I mean.
Well, one of them's going to be right.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know, and I genuinely don't, and if I did, I wouldn't say anyway, but I'm of the opinion that if we get him, it will be one of those deals that is done at like 11:30 when the window's shutting, because he hasn't gone anywhere else.
I think you're right. It was because Daniel Levy? We inquired about Victor in the summer. I know this is to be true. We inquired about Victor because I think Peter Lowell and Neil Lennon have subsequently confirmed it. We inquired about him in the summer, and Daniel Levy said it's £5 million up front for a 1 year loan.
Jeez, oh.
So that's why it didn't go anywhere. Because there's no point even... It's not like, you know... Imagine,
that's 100 grand a week, so that's never going to fly. I mean, not for us, anyway.
Think about buying a house. You know, if you put in an offer for a house and, you know, you're 20 grand apart, there's a bit of negotiation. If you're 200 grand apart, there's no point even starting a negotiation.
You still go for a look round, though, right?
Plus his wages.
So...
Would that be plus his wages?
No. Aye, plus his wages. Aye, that was just a fee to Spurs.
To rent him.
Yeah, not going to happen.
No.
So,
do you know, I've been thinking about this, Harry, and I'm trying to think of any players we've signed in the winter transfer window that have made any impact whatsoever, apart from Samaras. And who is the chap? The guy who scored the wonder goal at Ibrox, and we hoped he'd stay, but he didn't. Came from Liverpool, remember?
Craig Bellamy.
Craig Bellamy. Just couldn't remember his name. I've been trying to remember his name for the last 20 minutes. Craig Bellamy. Apart from Bellamy and Samaras.
Robbie Keane.
Robbie Keane. But even he was coming into a poor team. He didn't really make that much difference. I mean, even Ross County beat them in the semi-final of the Cup when he was playing. But I can't think of any winter signings that have come in and put their mark on the team. So we were very optimistic. We keep thinking, we'll get these guys. Can you think of any?
I can't off the top of my head. I mean, I think back to last January, and I think the two that stick out, or three, was Ollie, what's his face?
Ollie Burke.
Oh,
Charlie Masunda, who was like the next best thing, Tim O'Weir.
Tim, exactly.
And
the two boys that they left in their clubs, Bayou and Shred.
Yeah, but the only thing I would say about that was the players themselves might have not made a difference, but the extra injection of people into the squad did.
Ollie McBurney had a good start.
He did. But I just mean it's, you know, having the players in sometimes can make the difference. I tell you, on the current squad, the thing that You would never in a public environment get an honest answer about this, right? But the thing that, one of the two players that really baffle me are Arzani.
Uh-huh.
What I don't understand is, if we were never, if he's only got 6 months left on his loan deal, right, and we were never going to play him after his injury, I don't understand why we didn't just say to Man City, look, he's going to be out for a year. That blows our 18-month loan deal away. There's no point. He may as well go back to you, get his rehabilitation with you, and then start training with your players, because he's never going to play for us again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand. I mean, unless you, there was just no, unless we offered that and Man City said, no, you've got him, so you're keeping him. I just don't see the point in having him hanging around the team if he's not going to be playing. And Shved is another one, because the stuff people were telling me from Celtic in the summer is, you're going to love Shved. He's got pace to burn. He's as skillful as Patrick Roberts and twice as fast.
Yep, and he can shoot on sight.
And he's, I mean, I've heard he's incredibly homesick. And I think, you know, you've got to sometimes take into consideration the massive culture shock of being a young guy on your own, going from...
No, he's a wife and a wife.
But when I say on your own, I mean, like, that's pretty much on your own. I mean, in like, you've got no friends around you, you've got no extended family around you, you've got nothing. You and your wife are going to somewhere completely different. I mean, by all accounts...
And he doesn't speak a single word of English. Yes. A single word.
Is that right?
I
you're sure that the club will get some responsibility there for dealing with that.
I mean, I'm only saying that. He lives right across the road from me. And I've tried to speak to the boy, and then I've got a couple of other players that live around me as well, and they say that he's in, he just, they can't communicate with him because he doesn't speak a one single word of English.
Well, what are the club doing about that? See, I think there's a responsibility on the club to deal with that.
Yeah.
To help that boy.
We try to, but we can't make him learn English. I mean, I have heard that Kieran Tierney's incredibly homesick.
Mm-hmm.
He's only 600 miles away in the country, in the, where we speak the same language. He's got the same TV programmes. He's so wealthy he could jump on a private jet and be home within an hour of feeling a bit down about himself, and then be back for training the next morning, and it wouldn't impact on him. But so if somebody in that environment could be homesick, I mean, I do have sympathy that people, football fans, can be about, oh well, he's earning millions of pounds. So he can still be incredibly homesick. He can still find the food different, the television different, the culture different, the time of day that we eat different, you know, just everything that we do being very different. And if you're, and I'm not saying he is or he isn't, you know, if you're not from a particularly educated background, so all of this comes as an incredible culture shock. I mean, look at Ian Rush when he went away to Italy and had to come back because nobody, everybody spoke a foreign language.
And he was a senior pro.
Having said that, I do find it odd that he's a million miles away from the first team, because he's not. It's not as if he's getting occasionally on the bench.
No.
He's just getting nothing. Aboue Kouassi.
Forgot about him.
It's patently... It's really odd, because every so often, all of a sudden it'll be like, on Twitter, Celtic FC... We wish Aboue Kouassi a happy 22nd birthday, and you think, gee, why has I forgot you are still here?
We paid money for him as well.
3.5 million.
Oh my goodness.
He had some really bad injuries.
He did.
Because you looked a player when he played.
But he's been fit since August.
Well, that's the one criticism I would have of Neil Lennon that I've always felt. He takes a like to a player or a dislike. And I don't know what you need to do to impress him, but players get marginalised. You never see them again, even though we paid money for them.
But are all football managers like that?
I don't know.
Brendan Rodgers did that.
Yeah, but Neal did it. What was the German centre half?
Marvin Comper.
Aye, but Ben Rogers isolated him, didn't he?
He isolated Chris Commons.
Yeah. You know,
Gordon Strachan did it the minute he didn't fancy Bobo Baldy, so that was it, didn't get near the squad. Martin O'Neill did it. All managers do it. For whatever reason, a player's not their type of player, million miles away from the team.
Well, we seem to have a whole clutch of players that we've paid money for who are not even getting quoted, in which case you need to get rid of them.
Well, that's the thing. Ibuie Kouassi,
they're not just even the money, it's the money we paid for them. A lot of them will be chunky on the salary bill. Yep. There's a lot of people in there that are on £5,000, £10,000, £15,000 a week. Some of those players must be on. That's a lot of money tied up in the budget.
Ibuie Kouassi, if Lennon doesn't fancy him, get him out the door. Actually, he's a young lad, so allow him to go and try and create a football career somewhere else.
I don't know why they don't phone up the likes of the Hibs and teams like that and say, here are boys that need games and they're better players than you've got. So take them on loan. They're better players.
And even if your point, Duncan, that I know the likes of Hibs and Aberdeen, their top wage is about £3,000 a week. And Kouassi might be on 15. But surely shelling out £12,000 a week for Kouassi is better than shelling out £15,000 a week for Kouassi, for argument's sake.
Especially if he's playing every week.
Makes him more available.
You can actually see, is he any good? But you'll not see if he's any good if he never plays.
I think it's hard to move the, if they're earning big money, it's hard to move them on with a transfer fee. But you're right, you get them out on loan. People like Jack Henry, that he's not going to move to Hibs or Hearts or somebody because they're not going to pay him what I imagine Celtic's paying him. But you're right, you're better getting them out and getting them either a profile that gets them a move somewhere else, or who knows, they might actually come on to a game and they can come back better players.
I mean, for me, the players that need to. Arzani, it must be something the Man City deal that we can't send him back. It's as much also that it can't be great for squad morale for a guy to be hanging around that everybody knows is never going to play.
Did you hear the comments that Scott, I know Scott Allen was the everybody's cup of tea, but the comments he made when he left about players who were in the squad that he said were model professionals who were being completely isolated and just weren't being given a chance. He thought that was what Rodgers had done to them.
But like I say, I think all managers do that. They have a core group of players that they like, and then there's another group of players who they've decided they're not for them. And they, as you say, Duncan, because Hendry's probably on £5,000-£6,000 a week at Celtic.
Well, he put his wage slip online so somebody can probably Google it.
Oh, aye, that's right. So say he's on £6,000 a week at Celtic. Problem is, Aberdeen, Hibs, Hearts, top wage is £3,000 a week and the bulk of the players are £2,000.
Aye.
So the problem is getting these players to go somewhere.
Aye. But you're right. But I think comments there, right? Managers, they all do it in some way, shape or form. And you mentioned Scott Allen there. That frustrating for me. But Scott Allen's had 13 moves. Scott Allen's, I don't know what age he is. He's not even 30.
No.
He must be about 26, 27. He's had 13 moves in his career. There's a common denominator there. It's not all those other clubs. But you're right. We've got a clutch. We've got 6-7 players that between them must be earning, I don't know, easily £100,000 a week maybe, that we could do with moving out or on loan or permanently. But it's easier said than done.
Any particular positions you fancy lucky?
I disagree with Duncan about Griffiths. If you don't play him, he'll no score.
But we're not playing him because he's been a stone overweight for 6 months.
Well, they keep on saying how well he's training.
Aye, that's the problem. So he's training and he's half a stone overweight.
I had a guy at the Rangers game with me in the 29th that I took to the game. It's his first ever Celtic Rangers game. He knows his football, but he's an English fan. He's actually a Sheffield Wednesday fan. And when Lee Griffiths came on and he's got no axe to grind. And he says to me, that guy is so out of shape, it's unbelievable.
So that's a guy you knew nothing.
So that was a guy that goes to football every week. He'll have known who Lee Griffiths is because he'll have remembered him playing down south, and he's just a high profile guy. But when he came on, he says, that guy is so out of shape, he doesn't look like a professional footballer.
He's not getting a game because he's not fit enough. I mean, and it's a catch 22. He's not looking fit enough to get a game.
No.
So he's not getting a game. And because he's not getting a game when he comes on, he's not getting up to fitness, and he's probably not motivated enough because he knows he's not going to get it. I think for his own good as much as anything else, he needs to go somewhere and play first team football at a level that he's at the moment.
Yeah, but he's out of shape, and his photographs online, he only bottles his champagne on a speedboat in Dubai, and bottles of beer at the bar he's just built in his house in Glasgow that he just moved into. The fact of the matter is that because there's been mental health issues with Lee Griffiths, everybody's actually frightened to say anything bad about it. But I get really uncomfortable with the adulation that Celtic fans still give him, because I think that for a long time he's been well off in him. And if the boys had if he's had reasons and he had mental health issues, then I feel bad about that. But right now he's letting us down right now. He's not in shape and he should be, and we need him. We need it, because what we need to sign now is a Lee Griffiths.
So we need to sign two strikers. Where do you see that stuff?
Where do you see what?
All that stuff you just described about speedboats in Dubai and.
I don't do a single form of social media, and I see them. Daily Record had a story, a picture of him on a speedboat with his girlfriend on a day off in Dubai, and I've seen pictures of his Instagram. Where he's built a bar in the house that he's moved into Glasgow. And he's got pictures of bottles of beer and like number 9 Griff on his bar and stuff.
I don't see any of that stuff. I didn't know that. I just was reading that, you know, whenever he was asked about him, Lennon would say he's training well, you know, and he's coming on. That was the only reference point I had. And I'm thinking, well, if that's the case, why don't you play him?
Because Lennon said that in September, October, November, December.
Exactly. That's why I keep thinking, well, why don't you play him?
Yeah. And if you read that, you've got to play the game here. If you read the words that Neil Lennon said about Scott Sinclair in the last couple of days, which are all like positive and wanting to stay, like you've got to play the game, I guess, as a manager, whether that be in football or any other line of work. You've got to protect the people that are working for you. But I don't know. Lee Griffiths isn't the answer. He actually is the answer. A fit Lee Griffiths is exactly what Celtic need right now.
But he's not fit.
Not even close.
Right. I didn't know that. I was only going by what I see in Celtic TV.
Soft focus.
They do need a striker. I see that our good friend Eddie was putting up cryptic things last night on the web about polishers and stuff like that.
Oh, I'll tell you all the names because I sent them through to him.
Oh, did you? So you're the source.
I'll tell you the names that he was talking about. Hold on, let me see.
What's polishers, did you say?
The Polish striker.
All right.
He's up a tin of polish or something.
There's Patrick Klamala. He's Polish striker. I think that was in the papers this morning.
Yeah.
Tino Kadawere, who's plays for Le Havre.
Uh-huh.
It would cost us about €8 to €10 million to get him, so I don't know. But we did it. We have inquired about him. Karola Philly, who's a Polish right back. We seem to be looking in Poland quite a bit. Another one that he put a thing up for was for Ki Sung Jung. So that was another one that he put a key up. He put a picture of a key up.
Right, of course he did. That's right, I saw that.
So there's that. And I'm trying to think of the other stuff. There's also...
What about the Slovenian boy? The guy that Anthony's been on about.
He's not our main target. And yeah, there's also an Ismaila Soro. That we are allegedly interested in.
See, that all of those names. Now, I don't know any of those players, but then why would I? The days of us signing players that I've heard of have gone. I don't play FIFA, so I don't know who these players are. But I would. That makes me nervous because that could be Bale, Shved, insert Duffer here. I at this time, and I don't want to sound desperate, although that's probably too late, I would far rather get somebody that is 32 or 33 at the English Championship right now. I don't give a shit whether we can sell them or not in 5 or 6 years. I'd rather get, and I'm making this up, a Peter Crouch type guy or an Andy Carroll type guy. That would be my preference rather than somebody that we spend 3 or 4 million on that we might be able to sell for 10 million in a few years.
I've just looked up Ismaila Sorow. So one of the reasons why I think it might be a real interest is because he currently plays in Israel, and we know who one of the favoured agents is. So the fact that he plays in Israel makes that sound real to me, but I've just gone on his Wikipedia and the only entry is Ismaila Sorow, born 7th of May 1998, is an Ivorian professional footballer. It's just been changed, actually.
He's now playing for Celtic.
As of 2020, he plays for Celtic and he loves the IRA.
Stop modifying his Wikipedia page, Barry.
So he's a midfielder. I've just seen Genk have put in a £2.5 million bid for him.
We've got an Ivorian midfielder, we know.
Exactly.
What's his name? Kouassi.
Yeah. I mean, my gut feel for this, we've got £40 million in the bank. And this is the occasion you spend whatever you need to spend to make sure you win the league.
Aye.
I agree. But what is really annoying me is, why haven't these players been signed? Why wasn't this work done?
I think the January transfer window is even worse than the summer transfer window for deals are done at the end. Clubs have got options, people have got options. Do you know what? There's a part of me thinks the transfer, you'd be just as well meeting the transfer window last a week.
Aye.
Because that's when all the business is done. Because players are all hedging their bets because there's clubs interested. Clubs are hedging their bets because they're interested in four different players. And everything then gets all funneled down in the final week once people start making moves. Clubs start signing players. Players start going somewhere. Just make the transfer window a week and we can all get it over and done with.
I mean, I agree with you. It gets done at the end. It's a bit like being the dance, and you wait till the lights goes on and see what's left.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, in January, we've got 4 games before the transfer window shuts. Our next game is Partick Thistle in the Cup, and then we've got Kilmarnock away, we've got Ross County at home, and we've got St Johnstone away. That's 9 league points. Mm-hmm. We don't take 9 league points from that. We're starting to panic. And I unfortunately think that anybody that we're going to get that's any good, we won't get until after that St Johnstone game, which is on the 29th.
To be fair, I would hope that coming back from Dubai and all the training they've done and the focus that's on winning this league, that those games would be won. They really need to screw up badly not to beat Kilmarnock, St Johnstone, and who was the other one?
Ross County.
Seriously, they can't beat them without bringing in new players. They've got to chuck it.
You're then into February and there's 7 games come in pretty much 3 weeks, 2 of which are Copenhagen. So I think it'd be nice to have signed somebody on the 1st of January and they'd headed out to Dubai and got to know their new teammates and started bonding, but it doesn't feel like that's going to happen. We've signed like a 16-year-old or something. That's clearly not going to make a difference.
No, that's...
What happened to Luca Connell?
Well, I tell you what, I went last week, or 2 weeks ago, I went to watch Celtic play Partick Thistle in the Glasgow Cup. It was down at Dumbarton. Celtic played their home games at Dumbarton. And the 3 players that I really watched in that game, Jack Henry played at centre-half, and he looked out his depth there. And wee Dembele was playing, and he looked like a million players better than anybody else that was on the pitch. But Connell played, and he was bang average. I mean, he just wasn't if you hadn't known we'd have signed him, he would just look like another kid that had come through the ranks. He didn't impress me at all.
What about the one they sent to Manchester United, the centre half? They got an Irish cap.
I don't know.
That's another one that I find odd. We signed him as a centre half who can play a bit of right back. He's another one who can't get near our bench, but has played for the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah, but he's Irish. He's Irish, Brian. He's Irish.
I just find it odd. I find it odd that he can't get near our squad, but he's played international football while he's been at Celtic.
Yes.
That's probably they're just capping him.
It's peculiar. Anyway, we've rambled on enough. Lackey, what's your expectation for the second half of the season? We've got 10 trophies in a row. Are we going to make it 11 and 12? Possibly even 13 with the Europa League? Or are we just going to stop at 12? Or what's your prediction for the remainder of the season?
I don't have one. Oh. I have hopes.
What's your hope for the remainder of the season?
Well, I hope that we win the treble.
But do you think we will?
I don't know.
Well, none of us know, but do you think?
The reason I'm not sure is because I don't know how that other mob will perform. Because we could play really, really well, and they could win all their games the way they've been doing, playing sometimes good and sometimes bad and getting last-minute winners and things like that. And the other teams need to join the party if this is going to work.
Based on what you're saying there, two of those games would be they would beat us from what you're just saying.
Well, the last two games that we played against them would make it that we will really need to play a lot better than we have done.
Duncan, expectations?
I find it astonishing that they could be so effective against Lazio and against Rennes and so ineffective against them. So there must be something to do with the psychology of that fixture. And at the moment, I think they need the upper hand.
Or Steven Gerrard studied the way we play more than Lazio did and set up his team to deal with it better than Lazio did.
Well, I would have hoped that after the cup final, our man would have been looking at their team and setting up our team to make sure that didn't happen again.
Duncan?
We've got 3 trophies to compete for in the second half of the season. The only one I actually care about is the league.
Uh-huh.
I think that we will win the league. The reason I think we'll win the league is that I think we have got more quality and depth than them to see us through the second half of the season. And I think we will win the league. And I actually think we'll win it by 5 or 6 or 7 points.
Duncan, I agree with you. 2 minutes ago we were discussing whether or not they might beat St Johnstone and Ross County. You know, that's my concern. But your brain tells you we've got better players than them. And if we play our best, we'll win it. And yet there's a bit of a saying, we're not as good as we think we are.
No, we're not as good as we think we are, and I don't think they're as bad as we think that they are either, but I just still think that over the course of a season, the quality and depth that we have will see us over the line with a wee bit to spare.
I hope you're right.
Scottish Cup, I don't know. And Europe-wise, I think if we get through the next round against Copenhagen, then we can actually mark that down as a pass mark if we don't go any further. What, we're last 32 now?
Yeah.
So if we get in the last 16, who's to say we couldn't get to the last 8? I don't think we've got the quality to go and win something like that. I don't think we're at that level, even close to that level yet. But if we can get through the next round of the Europa League and win the league, and who knows, with Scottish Cup, I think a lot will come down to the draw. Scottish Cup's early. The Scottish Cup's about 3 weeks before the season ends this year. I didn't realise that.
Oh, we play Scottish. It's to do with Hampden being ready for the 2020 games. We play the Scottish Cup final, then we play the last game of the season.
Well, Harry's got us in the Scottish Cup final. That's good.
Well, it's good to end the season in the Scottish Cup final. It's a nice ending for the season. Do you know, there's an interesting thing. I mean, we can think whatever we think. What's important is what the team feels, what they believe. If they believe they can win these things, they'll win them. I remember that the Rangers brought in a psychologist a way back in Murray's time when they were on the waiting end in a row. And one of the questions he asked them was, how many of you think you can win the league championship? And they all put their hands up. And he said, how many of you think you can win the European Cup? And none of them put their hands up. And he said, well, that's the reason you won't. So it's a lot to do with what the team believes.
I think the team believes.
We believe.
I think actually the problem was the team were, I think the team and the management were overly confident going into the last league game. I think they just thought they needed to turn up at Celtic Park and get a result. So here's a quick quiz for you, right? Who is this player? Played 150 games in Scotland, scored 44 goals, won three leagues, one Scottish Cup and one League Cup. Who is that? That is Brian Laudrup, right?
Oh, I saw that the other day.
Who is this player? He played 167 games, scored 62 goals, won three leagues, three Scottish Cups and three League Cups.
Lee Griffiths.
Sinclair.
Scott Sinclair, who has just signed a 2.5-year deal with Preston.
Oh, has he?
Yeah.
Do you know what I was thinking? And I thought, well, I put this on Twitter now, and folk will laugh at me. I was trying to think of, if you were saying who were the best 10 foreigners to play in the Scottish League, how many of them would be Tims? I think the most of them would be. If you think of the foreigners we've had and the foreigners they've had, I think that the best, the majority of them have been Celtic players. Think about it. Larsson, Lubo, Nakamura. You know, if you threw them all, the players that have played for us, the players that have played for him.
But they would if Rangers fans would just be saying, well, it's Laudrup, it's Amoruso, it's Lovenkranz, it's...
Well, you see, that right away, Lovenkranz, no.
Yeah, I think Duncan's point is, they would say that and they would believe it.
I did think of Laudrup, and I did think of the German, who was the big German guy.
Oh, yes.
Yes, he was a very effective player. And I thought they would throw in Amoruso. But apart from them, do they compare to the players that have played for us? No. Decanio, Cadetti, Van Hooydonk, Andy Tom, Nakamura, Johan Hjalde, Larsson, just run them off.
Anyway,
On that stat,
I will say Lucky Moore and Duncan, thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure, sir.
Cheers.
Hail, here's to good 2020. Walk out to winter,
swear I'll be there. Hope you enjoyed the podcast. There's going to be more along again soon. If I can be bothered, there might even be a decade review podcast. Certainly be a podcast before the Partick Thistle Cup game. Don't forget, Duncan is from the Glasgow Rocks, and the Glasgow Rocks have got fixtures. If you're listening to this, it should be out Thursday. So if you're listening to this, there's a game tomorrow on Friday at the Emirates at 7:30 on Friday night. There's also a game the following Friday, and by the looks of things, on the Sunday as well. Certainly a lot of Glasgow Rocks games coming up in the next wee while. They've got a whole run of January games by the looks of it. So if you want to go along, it's great value for money. My 9-year-old loved it because it's quite fast moving. Anyway, you can go on to the Glasgow Rocks website, which is glasgowrocks.co.uk, and you can see how you can get along to the games. Enough of me. That was me, Harry Brady, with him, Duncan Smiley of Glasgow Rocks fame, and Lackey Moore of a boat called Dignity, probably. Anyway, the Mill Podcast along soon. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening and downloading and doing whatever you do. Have a good 2020, and good night, and God bless. Good night. This generation.